Welcome to 60 Scales and the Truth, a podcast where amazing guitar players reflect on their lives and on how they got where they are today. My name is Niels Guns. I'm a journalist, podcast maker, and a guitar fanatic. Thanks for tuning in. My guest today is a guitar player of who basically all phenomenal guitar players say he is a phenomenon. If you saw and heard him play, you'll probably agree with them. Besides having out-of-this-world technique, he just makes beautiful music. Welcome to this episode, Matteo Mancuso.
Thank you.
Matteo, how are you? Because this year must have been crazy, right?
I'm good. Sometimes I'm a little bit tired because of the traveling and all of that. But, you know, if it is for playing guitar with my friends, with my trio, it's always a good vibes, you know? This year is pretty fantastic to me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because I said in the intro, a lot of phenomenal guitar players say you are phenomenal. Like, yeah, like what does that do to you? Because it must be great, but also can you reflect a little bit on that?
Well, yeah, it feels great, of course. You feel a little bit of responsibility sometimes because you hear so many great players talking about you. He's amazing, he's great, I like him. And then you feel the need to study more, you know? And that was like one of my first reactions, especially when I first saw Steve Vai talking about me or Aldi Miola talking about me, you know? So it was kind of, okay, I have to take this as a positive thing, of course, but it's also one reason more to practice and, you know, give 100%.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's
both a little bit of pressure, but also focus. Both of it, right?
It's pressure for sure, but you need to like transform this pressure into focus and, you know, you need to keep playing for sure. And especially in our job, you need to keep your chops up and you need to be always in shape, especially for the music I do. That is really, you know, you need to be technically speaking very active. So that's why it was one of the reasons I basically play guitar every day. I try to play every day. Yeah.
Yeah, so for me, it's almost like somebody who does top sport, right? Like he has to be in shape and something like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not like, luckily, it's not like sports that you have to compete with other.
Yeah.
Because somebody, sometimes it looks like that, you know? Sometimes it looks like you need to be the best, but it's not really like that. You need to be in shape in order to make your music sound as best as you can, you know. I always say that it's a competition against myself. I need to be better than myself yesterday, you know. And with this mindset, I think it's a little bit more sane to your brain.
Can you tell me something about how did you grow that mindset? Because if you start playing guitar, okay, it's fun and it's a joy and an adventure, right? But at one point it must have started like, okay, I want to be really good. So can you tell me something about developing that mindset?
Well, it didn't start from the beginning, that's for sure. I started when I was around 10 years old. And when I started, it was like my favorite hobby, you know? I didn't know that it can become a work. So it started like more a funny thing for me. I knew from the beginning that I had some predisposition for the guitar because there were some things that were easier for me compared to like my other friends that were also playing the guitar, you know?
Okay. That's probably talent then, right?
I think talent exists, of course, but there's a limit that talent cannot break. And if you want to go beyond that limit, I think you need to have talent plus discipline.
Yes.
Yeah. Especially for the kind of music I do. But I think for every kind of music, if you want to achieve a certain level, I think talent is not, you cannot only have talent, especially mm-hmm. right now.
Mm-hmm.
You need always talent plus discipline. And I think I discovered that when I was around 15 or 16,
mm-hmm.
because before that, I was just comparing myself with my friends or mm-hmm. just with the musician around me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, okay, I'm better than everyone else. So that it means that I don't have to study because mm-hmm. I'm already good. And when you start comparing yourself with the world
yeah.
and like starting searching on YouTube and see all the other guitar players comparing yourself with your heroes, then you start to, you know, understand, okay, I need to practice. I need to practice a little bit more in order to achieve that mm-hmm. kind of musicianship. And I think also classical guitar helped me a lot to achieve this, because in order to play some classical guitar pieces, I understood that, okay, I need to have discipline. I need yeah. to study this piece every day, and I need to be aware of all the details mm-hmm. about the performance and all of that. And I started working on that also on the electric guitar.
Is that maybe a key, this also, looking into a classical guitar, because it's such a different approach, right, to playing guitar, the fingering and the positions, like, compared to rock guitar, it's like another world, almost.
Yeah, I think everything is more disciplined on the classical guitar mm-hmm. world, because you have more history, of course. You have like 300-400 years of technical classical guitar studies. So you have more books available, you have more people that got into this world and, they added something during time. And electric guitar, compared to the classical one, is a fairly new instrument.
Mm.
We started discovering the technical possibilities of the electric guitar in these years, you know. In the last 20 years, the electric guitar level got a little,
yes,
a lot higher than before. And that was the same thing with classical guitar. When you think about Segovia, for example,
mm-hmm.
and when you think about all these other new classical musicians now,
yeah,
the levels got up even higher, you know.
So you use that experience of classical guitar.
I kind
as
of
well.
Use that experience and that kind of discipline also to, like, you know, you need to use the best fingering possible for this passage, or mm-hmm. you need to study how to start a line, in which finger you need to start this line, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of discipline, I try to apply it on my electric world.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like classical guitar. I like to play classical guitar, but I consider myself primarily an electric guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, I wanted to play in distortion. I wanted to rock, you know, and I wanted to use the electric guitar sounds. But meanwhile, I wanted to have also the discipline of the classical guitar, because I knew that it would help me with time. And that's what I really like about the classical guitar world. The fact that you have all the details in focus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because it's everything performance. I don't want to say that. But I think you need to be the best musician as you can be. And in order to do that, you need to also have that kind of discipline.
What helps you in achieving that discipline? Because I can imagine you're at home. And there's like, anybody has a lot of distractions nowadays, right?
Well, especially the phone. I mean, the phone, it lets you waste so much time. But I have like one thing that I always want to do, and it's to play every day without skipping a day. Sometimes it can be tough because you have very busy days. And sometimes you can't like have time to play the guitar. So what I force myself sometimes to play the guitar at least for 2 hours, mm-hmm. if I'm able to. It is usually 4 hours,
mm-hmm.
because it is usually in the morning most of the time when I have like a free day. It mm-hmm. is usually in the morning because my brain is fresh and I can also study new things, you know. Mm-hmm. So right now it's usually 4 hours every day. But back then when I was a teenager, of course, I have so much free time compared to now. And of course, back then was even 8 hours a day.
Mm.
But it was fun to me because I was learning a lot, and I didn't really have a practice routine. Mm-hmm. And I don't have it even now, but I think my practice now is a little bit more structured compared to when I was a teenager, for example. So right now I know the things I have to study. Like I know, okay, this is a weak point. I have to work on this kind of thing. Back then it was, okay, I like this song. I have to learn everything about this song. And then I jam over this song for the 3 hours.
Noodling maybe also.
Noodling. But it was helpful actually. Okay, noodling, yeah. I think, is helpful. But
is it also helpful because developing technique, it's also a matter of the mind, right? Like, and focus and unable to really have joy in music. That's joy, of course. But to... There's also the gut, right? And the noodling is maybe more directly from the gut, so to say, than from the mind, right?
I think playing songs in general, it's more from the gut.
Yeah.
And I always like this idea of, okay, if I have to practice, it needs to start from a song. Mm-hmm. Because I know that I will have more fun doing it. So if practice is not fun, it would be less effective, I think. If you are practicing and you force yourself to practice, it's also useful because sometimes I don't want to play guitar, but I know that I have to practice. Mm. Luckily for me, it's mostly fun. But sometimes it can happen that you just don't want to play. Mm. And in my case, if I don't want to play, I force myself because I know that it's my job, you know. Mm. Back then it was different because Steve Vai wasn't talking about me. Aldi Meola wasn't talking about... Like, so it was more relaxed for sure. And if there were days where I didn't feel to play guitar, I just didn't play it, you know. Mm. Now it's a little bit different. I have more discipline. I try to be more effective from this thing. But it's always fun, luckily.
Yeah. That's good because sometimes if I, I want to talk about your first YouTube video you ever uploaded. Technical difficulties.
Oh, yeah.
And you... It sounds a little bit severe upon yourself to say like, I don't really like it and was not really good. But I'm like, whoa, dude.
I'm always harsh about myself because I know that I'm the best judge of myself because I know myself better than everyone. Mm-hmm. So I, for example, I know when I'm hearing an improvisation, I know when I'm really improvising and when I'm not, because I know all my licks, you know? And because of that, I have this mentality that if you are if yourself is your best teacher, then you will improve fast. Mm. And if you relax a little bit, then it will become a little bit slower to improve. Mm-hmm. So I have this mentality, sometimes I force myself to, okay, I have to do this solo in the first 3 takes. Mm-hmm. If I don't do that in the first 3 takes, I do something else. Mm. And sometimes I force myself to do this kind of stuff because I want to have a strong mindset about this. And if you let yourself to be your best teacher, I think that would be a really good thing.
Somebody else who might also know you very well is of course your father, who's also a professional guitar player. I listened to some of his music in preparing this interview, and what struck me, he's a completely different player obviously, right?
But but
what struck me was his tone. He has a beautiful tone, right? Is that did you talk a lot about that, developing your tone with your father perhaps?
I remember that. Well, back when I started, I was playing without nails, for example, and the tone was so much different. Mm. And thanks to my father, I discovered that you need to have nails also in order to play electric guitar, because he has such a beautiful tone, you know, and it's also because of his nails and also because of his attack and the way he plays, you know. So I always searched for a tone that was similar to his. And one of the reasons was, of course, the fact of the nails. But also, you know, you need to have, I think, a good idea of what your tone will be in your head before actually playing the notes, you know. And this will be helpful. also for the classical guitar, helps you a lot achieving a good tone, because you don't have any pedals, you don't have any amps available. So if you have a bad tone, it's because of you, you know, especially if you have a good guitar. Like, you, I have a 5K guitar and my tone is bad. That's not the guitar for sure.
Yeah, it reminds me of Nuno Betancourt, who he just plugs in, right, into the amp, and maybe one pedal or... And he sounds
great. Sounds amazing. So, I think you need to work on your tone a lot.
What do you like about your father's tone? I was curious.
Well, it's elegant. I think one of the first adjectives will be elegant, because he has a way to, like, play a lot of notes without being too, overwhelming sometimes. Because there are people that are playing a lot of notes and they sound over the top. You can play like just a few notes and even a lot of notes, but they will always sound on the right spot. And this is also taste, you know. It's not just tone. And the way he plays something. And I think because he worked a lot on songs, because he's also a producer, other than a guitar player. So sometimes he also knows what is the right thing to do on that part of the song. So if the right thing to do is just a bending, he will do just a bending, you know. If the right thing to do is just a wanky chord, he will do just a chord. So... And I think it's also experience. What I saw from time to time is that it never really constricted me to play like this from the start. You should play like this. It kind of, play what you feel in that moment, because, you know, you are like 10 years old. I know that you want to play a lot of notes. And when I discovered Van Allen, especially, I know that you want to play every note available on the fretboard. But he knew that it was a phase, and he knew also that you need to pass a lot of phases before actually entering to.
So he had a lot of confidence in you then, because he had to let go as well.
Luckily, it was really. I always say that he wasn't really a teacher for me, because he didn't really told me, you should do this like that, or you should do this like that. He always told me, you should listen to this guy, you should listen to this other guy, and all of that. So he was more kind of a listening guide. And when he knew that I was ready for something new, fresh, he was telling me, now you need to listen Wes Montgomery, or now you need to listen to Django. So I discovered a lot of jazz stuff thanks to him, you know.
Reminds me of Pliny. We'll be talking about him later. I once heard an interview, and his father told him, he asked his dad, I want to learn jazz. How do I do it? And his father said, just listen. That's basically the same, right?
The listening process is so important. I mean, it's almost like learning a language, you know, when you're learning English, for example. I learned English through like YouTube interviews. And not books for sure, because I wasn't studying a lot of English when I was in high school.
Yeah, but that's an interesting comparison, because the rhythm and the intonation and all, it's so important in a language.
Yeah.
Same goes with guitar, right? Just the listening process is
listening process is very important. And of course, it's also important to like understand what's going on. And that's when theory comes in, you know, and it will be helpful. But I think the first step, it's always the listening.
And you've been listening to so many genres, right? I mean, I heard you play country licks that are insane, and obviously flamenco, classical, rock, metal, jazz. I'm curious, what happens if you're on stage improvising? How does that blend of genres enter your improvising? Because that must be something as well, right?
Well, it basically depends on the context, because I know for sure that if I'm hearing something like I'm improvising on a background track and it's very bluesy and he has a like let's say, a blues context, I immediately think about Robin Ford, Larry Carlton, maybe SRV, Steve Ray Vaughan.
Yeah.
Some, you know, Richie Blackmore kind of stuff, because it was one of my first influences. So I pick up the guitar player that I remember is like the closest to the style that I'm hearing, mm-hmm. and I try to emulate that. Mm-hmm. And that was helpful, especially when I was starting. Mm-hmm. And when I'm playing my music, because I want to mix everything, I try to have a solo section that is, you know, where you can put everything on it. Mm-hmm. So I can mix like bebop stuff, I can mix blues stuff. And I like to mix all of that because I think it's part of my vocabulary. I don't want to be constricted just like I just want to play country or blues or rock. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be constricted by the context. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, the only way I really feel free in improvisation. Mm-hmm. Like I feel that everything will be in the right context. If I just play, you know, blues stuff or rock stuff, I cannot play my Charlie Parker licks, you know? So that's why I try to find in my songs solo structures where you can basically play not everything you know, but you know, you can safely play some stuff that they will not be out of context.
Yeah. And that's also interesting about the guitar, because the guitar itself is such a versatile instrument, right?
Yeah.
Does that appeal to you as well, that the versatility of the instrument itself?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the reasons why guitar players buy so much guitars, you know?
Yeah.
So many guitars.
And yeah.
It's because I think, if you compare like a Telecaster with an humbucker guitar, mm-hmm. they are two completely different instruments. It's mm-hmm. almost like you are really playing a different instrument. And a single coil guitar can suggest you some things. Maybe a jazz guitar can suggest you some other things. Mm-hmm. And it depends also if the guitar has a lot of sustain, maybe you play less notes. Mm-hmm. If it has less sustain, you play more notes, and maybe you play more sort of a bebop stuff if you have a dark tone, let's say. And so the guitar itself suggests to you which direction you want to take. And I always liked humbucker guitars because I think the humbucker is closer to the sound I have in my head sometimes, mm-hmm. because, you know, I have so many influences, but one of the guitar players that I like the most, tonally speaking, is Eric Johnson. Mm. And the strange thing is Eric Johnson is using a Strat.
Yeah.
But I don't know why, but I feel that I'm closer to his tone when I'm using a humbucker sometimes, because I have the mid-range. Mm-hmm. Also, Alan Osworth, for example, is an influence. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I want to get close to his tone. Scott Anderson is also another influence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes the right guitar suggests you the right thing to do. That's why you need to have a lot of guitars.
Mm-hmm. And it's just cool.
And
right.
It's just cool, you know? They look cool.
Yeah, right. There's so many stuff available also, right? I mean, hey, talking about composition, I saw an interview with, because Aldi Miola, he praised you, right, for your technique. And then like last week there was something he said, yeah, well, composition, that's something he should focus on. It was not really critique, right? But it was like more, maybe that's something he could develop in more.
I think it was a suggestion, not a critique.
But yeah, no, it wasn't. But do you agree with that? Because we talk a lot about technique also, right? But composition, that your focus will be going more there in the future?
Well, it needs to be there, because otherwise I don't know what I will do without composition, you know? Mm-hmm. It's something that it needs to be, you feel that it is the next step, you know? Mm-hmm. And I always like composing because I always like composing stuff that is not associated with genres of styles. And mm-hmm. One example could be Falcon Flight, for example. It's a tune from my first album, and it was one of the tunes where I didn't really knew what style or genre was. Like, it's not fusion because it's not really fusion stuff. It's not jazz for sure. And it's not rock. So I like to, when I'm composing, I always like to creating something new. I don't like to compose thinking about, okay, I have to do a rock stuff, okay, mm-hmm. or now I have to do a jazz tune. I don't like to compose that way. But of course, it needs to be something that an artist needs to have. I think it is something that it develops over time, because I started composing when I was around 20 or something. And I didn't really compose before because I was too obsessed with the instrument, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like too focused on getting good at that. Mm-hmm. But then I discovered, you know, that you can also get good at your instrument and composing your own stuff. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, sometimes you need to let go the instrument a little bit and think only with your mind, because the guitar itself can be too...
it can limit you maybe also, right?
Can limit you a lot, because sometimes I'm thinking myself about a melody and something, maybe like a chord progression, and then I grab the guitar and it changes, because I know all my chord shapes, I know a lot of muscular memory, so the muscular memory kicks in sometimes and you follow your fingers and not your brain.
So is it a way of composing for you then, maybe to just sit back and let the melodies enter your head then, or...?
Right now, I like to think about a melody or a composition before I actually grab the guitar. So I know that that melody or that composition is not affected by my ability on the instrument.
Yeah.
So the idea is more pure, let's say. Mm-hmm. And then when I grab the guitar, I just want to follow my ear, not my knowledge, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was hard for me to do. Especially at the start, because I was composing stuff that was under my fingers. Okay, I have this lick. Mm-hmm. Let's compose something over this lick, and then let's play a theme just by improvising and trying to search something inside my licks. Let's say. Now it's more like, okay, I don't want to follow what I can do. I want to follow what I want to do. Before, when I started composing, it was more, okay, I follow the things I can do on the guitar and I mix them in order to create something new. Now it's more, okay, I want to create something new from scratch without touching my guitar. And then I can be influenced by the instrument, but the idea needs to be there from the start. Mm. So I know that it's not affected by my ability to play the guitar, you know. Mm-hmm. This way of composition, I think it's more you develop less guitaristic ideas, let's say. Mm. So the composition sound more fresh to my ears. Mm-hmm. It's the way I compose now, rather than before. It was just, okay, grab the guitar and let's see what we got. Yeah.
Am I correct that your girlfriend, she started composition, right?
Or yeah. She actually finishes studies in composition. She's a classical music composer. Yeah.
So yeah, is that a topic of talking with her as well about the approach of composition? Because she has a lot of knowledge then, right? About this.
Yeah. And you know, we have different ways to organize ourselves on the composition process, for example. So she has a way, you know, a very technical way to composing, and that's because on the classical music you need to be able, of course, how to read and how to interact with paper first of all. So she starts most of the time by writing it on paper, and that's a different thing from my perspective, you know, because I always start sometimes with the instrument directly, or sometimes even just an idea on my mind and I record it. So like my approach is more direct, let's say, but her compositions are of course more complicated because they are influenced by classical music. So in that case, I think you need to write it down, you know, because it will help you a lot. So she has a lot to do with paper and not me. I can read music, but I'm not a really good sight reader. So I sometimes, most of the time, I don't write my compositions. I have a demo project on Logic, but I don't have the score music most of the time.
But did you meet at the same, you went to the same conservatory or?
We went to the same conservatory. I did jazz guitar and she did, of
course. So you met, there?
We actually met in high school. And it was the same musical high school in Palermo. Then we met after a few years at the conservatory. And yeah, we met there,
So how important was that period in the conservatory for you?
Well, it was really, really important. Not only because I discovered, you know, a lot of friends and a lot of new music. I luckily had really good teachers, especially my jazz guitar teacher is called Paolo Sorge. He's a jazz player from Catania. He was teaching there back when I was there at the conservatory in Palermo, of course. Of course, I did a lot of stuff about playing together with people. So I think that was, that aspect was the most helpful side of the conservatory for me, being able to play with a lot of people. But they were... other aspects that were a little boring for me. And one downside that I have to say is that we did too much theory and I think we needed to play more together, especially because it was a jazz course, you know? And because it was a jazz course, the first thing you need to do is to play together with people and play with your instrument a lot. But the study plan was more like, okay, you have like 12 or 13 studies of theory, for example, theory subjects. And then you have like three or four instrument subjects. And that was kind of unbalanced for me because I think that especially in a jazz course you need to play a lot in order to get good, especially. So I think that was the only thing I didn't like, because once I had all the practice subjects done, then there were all the theory subjects and there were really a lot. They were too much compared to the practice stuff.
Well, you have the rest of your life to, to practice. Hey, something completely different is also, well, Matteo as a performer, right? Because you have the composition, technique. And what I actually like a lot is that you're just wearing a hoodie as you do now. Right? It's not like this is a stack of Marshall amps and like firework and whatever. Is that almost maybe a statement like, oh, it's just about the music? Just because you go like this maybe on stage as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Is that deliberately or how, can you tell me something about that?
Well, I think it's part of myself. I don't want to be... maybe I just want to say that I'm just a regular guy who likes to play guitar, you know. I don't want to look like a rock star. Not because I don't like to look like a rock star, but because I want people to concentrate on the music first and then the people second. Because sometimes we are too focused on the person itself rather than what it does. So you need to follow a person for what it does and what it can do rather than what it represents or what it looks, you know. I just don't want to represent something, you know. It's just part of myself to be what I am every day, and I want to be on the stage like that because this is what I do every day, you know?
Yeah, to me, that there's a lot of power behind that as well, to just do that. Like, this is who I am. you know, and it's about my music, and I'm not gonna pretend like I'm anybody else, right? I mean,
and of course there are some cases where I like to have a good, you know, like Joe Bonamassa does, you know, you have your suit, very clean, everything on point, and you deliver another message with this kind of clothes, you know? And that doesn't mean that it's fake. That means that, you know, it is a part of your musical experience sometimes. So I'm not saying that if you want to be like real with yourself, you need to dress like that. You need to dress like you are feeling is the most comfortable for you. And if you are seeing like Jacob Collier, he does like concerts with the Crocs, for example.
Yeah, but that's him.
And that's him.
Yeah.
The important thing is that you do not dress like yourself.
Yes.
When I see Joe Bonamassa playing with the suit, I know, okay, that's Joe.
Yeah.
And that's real to me. But of course, the most real thing to me is wearing this.
Yeah. There's this one video of Eugene's trick bag where you're also wearing a hoodie, and there's you see in the back poster
maybe
of
the Hendrix poster,
a Hendrix poster, but also a blanket of 101 Dalmatians. Right? I'm like, yeah, this is just his room, and he didn't think, oh, this should be a different blanket or anything, right? And to me, that's very appealing. I'm like, yeah, because there can go a lot of energy into this bullshit, right? To get rid of it.
I mean, yeah. And a lot of people told me, you should do better videos. The framing is not right. And you should clean your room before actually doing the videos. But it's my fault, you know.
Yeah, no, but that's you. I mean, I like it. I mean, hey, a returning topic sometimes in this series, because sometimes it's a bit messy with the schedule. But the guitar player who I talk to has a question for the next player. I mentioned Pliny before. I'll be talking to him in a while. Is there something you'd like to ask him, perhaps?
Well, yeah, How do you produce your music? Because it sounds incredibly good. And Pliny is one of the guys I followed. Is one of his master classes when I was at the Guitar Summit last year. And it's like a guitar convention they do once a year in Germany.
Germany, yeah. Mannheim, right?
At Mannheim, yeah, that's right. And he said something about composing his own stuff that is very appealing to me, because I always compose my own stuff with the people around me. Like, okay, I have this idea and I have this riff that I composed. Maybe I have a little demo before, but it's just like drums and guitars and that's it. There's nothing like fancy about it. And Pliny is more structured on this side of things. And because his albums are sounding incredibly good, I like the mix, I like the guitar tone. I wanted to know more about this kind of stuff.
I guess he has a new course coming up on Guitar Messenger about this subject. Yeah. So it will be released soon, I guess. But I'll ask him and I'll cut it and send it to you if he has the answer.
That would be amazing, because I'm the kind of guitar player that, you know, of course, I produce my own stuff, but my production skills are not very good, you know. I can barely do my drum loop on Logic, you know. And Pliny,
he's
on the other
really
side.
He's really great at that.
He's really great at that. So he can, I feel that he can arrive at his point on his mind in a faster way. Like he doesn't need to have musician around him in order to build an idea in a very detailed way. In my case, I have like a rough idea on Logic. Okay, this is the song, this is the...
So you need the drummer to say, you can do this maybe, or the bass player.
I need like the drummer and the bass player will transform the song where we will play together, because my drum is very basic, because I don't want to tell the drummer what to do. He needs to know what is the best drum solution for that song, mm-hmm. because he's the drummer. I will not have better ideas than the drummer itself, because mm-hmm. he knows way better his instrument than I do. So this is one way to look at it. But at the same time, I would like to have maybe for some of the song a more structured idea. And because of that, you need to know some things. Mm. And maybe the Pliny's mindset is more like, okay, I have this idea, I have more details in this idea, but I also know that maybe the song will transform once he record with his musicians, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I really like the way his album sounds.
Yeah. Some new world, right? Hey, a final question before we wrap this talk up. You have any goals for the upcoming year? Because last year has been crazy, right? Can you tell me something about that?
Well, my goal for this year is compose at least 9 new songs.
Okay.
This is the goal I want to achieve.
Why 9?
Because it's the same number as the previous album.
Okay.
I want the next album to be at least the same or more. Like 9 songs will be perfect. 12 will be amazing. But I want to compose at least 9 songs by the end of this year will be my goal for sure. Be better at production, as I said. Be better at guitar, like every year.
How is that possible, man?
It's possible, trust me. And you know, enjoy life also, you know. You need to have some balance, I think. It's not always about music. It's also the people around you. It's important to have them.
Maybe that's the most important, right? That's where it all starts.
Yeah. I consider myself incredibly lucky because the people around me are also interested in music.
Yeah.
So like my girlfriend, she's a musician too. My father and my family, they are all interested in music. So it's always like, you know, you are with people and you can talk about everything with these people. I consider myself very lucky because of that.
Enjoy life. It's a nice ending. Matteo Mancuso, thank you so much for your time.
And thank you.
Listeners, thanks for listening.